It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret. A bipartisan bill circulating in the state capitol would require more education on menopause from local health care providers. In a statement, lawmakers say menopause and perimenopause are, quote, often misunderstood and too often neglected or ignored. They also highlighted testimony from women about the difficulty in being heard and taken seriously discussing menopause and the issues that surround it. Here's Margie from Milwaukee describing her symptoms from a WPR program back in 2023.
When I was working, I'm retired now, I was being diagnosed in my early 50s with ADD, the inattentive type. And I know it was compounded during menopause, and I did end up losing a job because of my difficulty being able to focus and stay organized. It was a really... It was extremely difficult time.
The proposed bill would call on the State Department of Health Services to create informational materials in partnership with local health care providers to inform patients and reduce stigma. So what should women know about menopause and this midlife transition? And what misconceptions are out there? Dr. Laura Bizzuto is the leader of UW Health's Menopause Clinic. She's an OBGYN and breast surgical oncologist and an assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Bizzuto, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start with this notion in the state legislature of giving more information to women when they see their health care providers about menopause, about perimenopause. From your perspective, what kind of information would be most useful in those situations?
Yeah, I think this is great to emphasize educating women and having options available for them to learn more about menopause and perimenopause. The most important thing is, you know, high quality evidence that's based in science that not only tells people what's happening, but what will happen with their health as they go through this transition.
There's, in some cases, maybe not enough information that women are encountering. But also there's a lot of, I understand, misinformation out there that you're worried about. What are some of the sources? What are some of the concerns you have of bad information out there?
Yeah, this has unfortunately just been an area that hasn't been as well educated about in medicine, and there's just been a dearth of information and for women and for, you know, educating physicians, unfortunately, until recently. And so whenever there's the gaps in available information and resources, unfortunately, a lot of misinformation comes up. And with the internet and how quickly things spread on the internet now, unfortunately, a lot of misinformation about supplements that maybe don't have very good information or data about them and other kind of things that don't have good evidence that they work for these symptoms. People can, they're looking for anything, so they'll find something out there on the internet that might not be as helpful as we hope.
I've heard that concern you mentioned before that healthcare providers, physicians, and others weren't getting enough training in issues related to perimenopause and menopause. Do you see that changing?
Yeah, I think so. So there were some major studies that were done on menopause and hormone therapy in the past that unfortunately didn't have great results, and so resulted in a lot of healthcare and health education and physicians kind of swinging away from looking at menopause, looking at treatments for menopausal symptoms for a long time. But now I think with this new emphasis on this transition that all women go through and the health effects that it has, I think there's a renewed interest in educating not just women, but also providers on how they can, you know, how this affects their patients and how we can help.
Can you lay out for us a little menopause 101, please? What is happening at this basically inevitable transition?
Right, right. So the ovaries, as they age, are just less and less efficient at doing their job, making eggs for fertilization and making hormones, including estrogen and progesterone. And so as the fertility declines, and that coincides with a decline in estrogen, which is the main hormone that causes the symptoms of menopause. So menopause is once the ovaries stop working and no longer ovulate eggs. And women haven't had a period for 12 months. That is the definition of menopause. So it's kind of a retrospective diagnosis. We can only know when someone's had their last menstrual period, once it's already happened and 12 months have gone by. But perimenopause is used to describe the time preceding that, when many women will experience some fluctuations in hormones as the ovaries are just becoming less efficient at their job.
And that can come with symptoms, manifestations of these changes going on. It can be very different, right, from person to person. But what are some of the most common symptoms, side effects that women might experience?
Absolutely. So the average age of menopause in the U.S. is 51 and a half years old, but there's a range of normal times that people can go through menopause. Really anywhere between 45 and 55 can be normal. And many people can experience some of these perimenopausal symptoms even well before they have their last period, even, you know, in their 40s. Most common symptoms that people experience are some changes in their menstrual bleeding patterns. And so some people's periods might get closer together before they eventually become less frequent. Hot flashes are very common. Some sleep disturbances, night sweats, which interrupt sleep, are very common. Even some changes in mood, increased risks of depression, anxiety, irritability can occur. Those are all common symptoms that people can experience.
Now, these are common symptoms, and they can vary in intensity. Are these things that people just have to live with, right? You have hot flashes, which can be debilitating for some people for periods of time. Is there treatment out there? And we'll dig into specific treatments, but do people have to accept that this is just the way it is, or are there options out there?
There are definitely options, and I'm happy to be able to say that we do have some good options, both for people who are interested in hormonal treatments and for people who aren't. Or for people who can't have hormonal treatments. It's definitely not something you have to suffer in silence, and seeking out medical care should be on people's radar. One of the best ways to find a provider who is well-versed in menopause care, the Menopause Society is our kind of medical organization that studies and takes care of menopause. And they have a online directory of certified menopause providers. So that's a really great way to find a physician or a nurse practitioner or PA who is well-versed in managing menopause.
We're talking with the leader of UW Health's Menopause Clinic, Dr. Laura Bizzuto. State lawmakers have drafted legislation that would require healthcare providers to give out more info on menopause and the time leading up to it. Dr. Bizzuto, let's start digging into treatment. Now, you mentioned a hormone treatment. Now, I remember a couple decades ago, one of the biggest health stories was, okay, we'd been using more and more HRT, hormone replacement therapy, for menopause. Then studies came out saying, hey, we're worried about maybe increased risk of cancer and certain heart conditions, things like that. And then some like backlash to the backlash saying, well, maybe it's about the timing. Where are we now in how we use hormone replacement therapy for menopause?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's actually a really good summary of where we've been and where we are now. I would say currently we have much better understanding of the risks that are associated with different times of use of hormone therapy, I would say. And so we have kind of better understanding that for women who go through early menopause, so menopause that's less than age 45, there really are significant health benefits to hormones that can help mitigate a lot of the health concerns that can happen. And then for people who go through menopause at a normal age, hormones can really help with a lot of the symptoms and have, for most women, have fairly minimal risks.
So when a patient is presenting with some of the more extreme manifestations of menopause, those debilitating hot flashes and night sweats, for example, what kind of process do you go through to figure out if hormone replacement therapy is the right answer?
One of the first things is just talking with women and making sure these symptoms really are due to menopause and not, I think sometimes as women, we want to attribute all of our symptoms to hormone changes and menopausal changes, but we want to make sure that really there's not an underlying health condition that's causing some of these similar symptoms. So seeing a doctor and being evaluated is important. And then a good health history, thinking about other health issues, family history, cancer risks, before we kind of think about what treatments might be best.
Then, and I hadn't known about this, there's a non-hormonal therapy. FDA approved it in 2023. Fezolinetant, if I'm saying that right. Can you tell us a little bit about this non-hormonal therapy?
Yeah. This is a newer medication, as you mentioned, that works on the area, the neurons in the brain that are affected by the changes in estrogen that occur with menopause and are basically the causal area of the hot flashes, cyclical hot flashes that people get with menopause. It's really great because researchers have found kind of the cause of these symptoms and a non-hormonal treatment that is very effective. So for most women who start this medication, they have really significant improvement in symptoms, even in just 2 weeks.
Is this a case where this newer medicine is turning into, you know, plan A, the first thing we try? Or if not, how are we balancing that versus those older hormonal medications?
For many women, we think about both hormonal and non-hormonal options, and it really just becomes a assessment of what might achieve the best results for an individual and their own priorities. There are certainly women for whom hormones are not recommended. Someone who has a history of a blood clot or bleeding problem, they may not be a great option for. And so, or a history of cancer. And so these non-hormonal options really open the door for women who can't have hormonal treatments to still get good symptom relief.
Now, for people dealing with the side effects of menopause, are there lifestyle things they can do, maybe instead of medication if it's not too severe, or alongside medication that will help at least with some of the symptom relief?
Absolutely. So a lot of the lifestyle changes have not great evidence that they actually help with the hot flashes or frequency that people get hot flashes, but they certainly may help with how bothered individuals are by them. So wearing layers, fans, weight loss has been shown to maybe improve some symptoms of hot flashes and things. The best evidence for non-medication options actually is cognitive behavioral therapy, which does have good evidence that it can help improve hot flashes and the bothersomeness that people experience from them.
Now, you mentioned making sure that, hey, this symptom is, in fact, from menopause and ruling out maybe some other underlying condition. Are there more serious health or medical conditions that might come along with menopause for some women, some complications, I guess, that you watch for?
Yeah. One of the first things that we think about is making sure any abnormal vaginal bleeding isn't from a cause that's, related to cancer or another issue that we need to address and that is important to rule out. Other things we think about are thyroid disorders, which can be common in women around the same age, joint pain and other causes of pain or insomnia are important to rule out. Weight changes can be related to thyroid or other underlying disorders that we want to make sure. Rarely cancers can have hot flashes, weight changes, and sleep changes, but that's luckily, relatively uncommon.
And yeah, part of your the many hats you wear, you're a surgical oncologist, and I wanted to ask, does the cancer risk profile of a woman change as they go through perimenopause and menopause?
Yeah, so breast cancer is the most common cancer that we see in this kind of age range of people, although colon cancer is becoming more and more common for women in their 40s. The other thing that we think about is the hormonal changes that come with hormone therapy can increase breast density, which can make mammograms somewhat more difficult to interpret, and prolonged use of estrogen and progesterone hormone therapy may be associated with a small increased risk of breast cancer.
Looking to the future, you mentioned you see improvements in the way healthcare providers are educated about menopause. How about the research landscape? Is this something that you've seen as maybe under-researched in the past? How are we doing on it now?
Yeah, it's definitely something that is getting more attention. And I think, you know, as we see with this new medication that was approved just a few years ago, there is more interest in research in this area. I think that there are going to be other medications in the same class that are being developed currently, and some other interesting targeted treatments for vaginal symptoms and others as well.
And bringing things back to this bill circulating in the state legislature, the statement on it says menopause can be associated with stigma. How can we reduce the stigma around this, you know, really perfectly natural life transition and make sure people are talking about it?
Right. I think it's important to remember and realize that half of the population is going to experience this at some point, and that this is, you know, a natural process that happens just like puberty. But there's no fourth grade health class for menopause, other than coming to your doctor with questions. So, and hopefully having more educational materials available.
Dr. Bizzuto, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Dr. Laura Bizzuto. She leads the menopause clinic at UW Health. She's an OBGYN and surgical oncologist, and she's an assistant professor in the departments of obstetrics and gynecology and surgery at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. When talking about the latest news on menopause treatment and education, that after lawmakers drafted a bill that would require more education for women at healthcare facilities about menopause and perimenopause. According to Axios, Wisconsin is not the only state considering this kind of legislation. More than 20 bills focused on menopause care have been introduced across at least 13 states just so far this year. And we want to hear from you. What was your experience like when entering menopause and that perimenopause stage? What information was out there that you found helpful? What misinformation did you come across? And what do you wish had been out there for you? And do you think this proposed legislation is going to be enough to help reduce stigma and inform the public? Email us. Let us know. Share your story if you're willing. The email is wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org. And you can .org. And you can find more coverage on issues at the state capitol. Visit wpr.org for coverage from our news team here at Wisconsin Public Radio.